Welcome to BridgeEd, the podcast brought to you by The Bridge here at Wellington College, where we'll be joined by a series of interesting guests to explore some of the most topical issues in the education sector.
So, Professor Abdelzanina Kari, I am so pleased to have the chance to talk to you again. I always enjoy our conversations. We've known each other quite some time. And I'm so pleased that the Bridge Journal of Educational Research and Theory is going to be publishing an article by you in the month of March. So I'd like to hear from you a bit more about the origins of that work, Exploring Signature Pedagogies to Innovate Teacher Education and Work in Africa. So tell us about that.
Thank you for the invitation, and it's also a pleasure for me to share with you some idea about education and pedagogy. Indeed, the paper on signature pedagogy you mentioned is a paper based on the idea that there is many things to do in education in Africa to improve the quality of education. But maybe there is something that it is not deserving the attention I think it deserves. It's pedagogy. And pedagogy in the idea that the key actor of pedagogy is the teacher. And I took the concept of signature pedagogy, which is well known in the global literature on education, and I tried to analyze the potential to use signature pedagogy in the current African educational system. And it gives me some new idea indeed, for instance, that a teacher need to have a mastering of the knowledge he's supposed to teach. And signature pedagogy may help teacher in Africa to improve their professional competency.
There may be some of our listeners who aren't familiar with the term signature pedagogies. Can you explain it a little bit?
Well, the idea of signature pedagogy is linked to the fact that good professional, know what to teach and what knowledge is useful to their profession. And indeed, signature pedagogy was applied mainly in medical profession and in other profession, and recently in the teaching profession. The idea is that we need to observe how good professionals are acting in the field to learn how to train the new generation of professionals. So the idea of signature pedagogy indeed is that we need to observe the community of professionals to be able to identify what knowledge is the most important for the profession. And this is really the main idea behind signature pedagogy, because for a long time, we are used it to teach knowledge based on curriculum, based on fact, based on what the program is stating about teaching. However, the idea of signature pedagogy, indeed, we need to focus more on the action.
There's something really important about this, I think, in this particular moment. There's a lot of discussion about the deprofessionalization of teaching and how important it is to recognize the practical wisdom that teachers draw upon in the classroom. So it sounds to me as though there's an element of this is that could be about empowering teachers and recognizing, that they are central to what will take place based on their decisions about the approach, the pedagogical approach they're going to take at a given moment.
You are absolutely right. I think we are living also, you know, everywhere with also the use of artificial intelligence in teaching, or at least in preparing teaching or preparing assessment. And I think we are worldwide at risk of applying what Paulo Freire called banking education, yes, which the idea that we need to look knowledge by artificial intelligence and to transfer it to the mind of students. And indeed, I think the educational process or the pedagogical process is, first of all, a human relation. It's also something which is contextual, where you have teacher, where you have learner, and you need to build a relationship. And it's only when you build a positive relationship that you can build knowledge. And I think signature pedagogy may be also a way to put again in the center of our discussion about education what I call meaning or significance of knowledge. You know, I think everybody spent a lot of year at schools, and when we try to remember what is the most important experience we had in schooling, most of time the experience is linked to person, one teacher, one event, one incident that really shaped our relationship with learning. And I think most of the time why we remember some event about our educational experience, because these events have a powerful meaning for us. So I think really we need to include again meaning in the center of our educational institution.
There's, you've been talking about AI, and certainly everyone is sort of struggling with the change that will bring to education and to the world in general. And there's a kind of anxiety about it. So focusing on the meaning making and what is human seems to be really key as we're going forward. And you mentioned Freire, and I'm wondering how important the dialogue is in the relationship between student and teacher in terms of meaning making. And you mentioned building knowledge, maybe the co-construction of knowledge, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, probably, and particularly in higher education. You know, I'm professor, I'm acting in higher education for almost 40 years. And our learner in higher education are adults. Our learner have a lot of competency. And if we want them to go further with new competency and to build their new knowledge, we need to recognize that they have something to bring to the pedagogical relationship. And I think that technology, our digital world, is currently maybe a help, maybe something that we can use. It may save time for us and for our student. So I'm really against all the idea to administer or to limit the use of technology of artificial intelligence in education. But in the same time, we need to build relationship, dialogue, co-construction, as you said. And I think the idea of co-construction is very powerful, because also the world of work is changing. The culture of work is changing. And I think we need to move away from the idea that our curriculum is built for a decade or sometimes for more. we need also to transform our relationship to teaching that it is a little bit outdated.
Mm-hmm.
and I think it's not easy because I'm really I'm glad to had my career at higher education in different country, but in the same time I recognize that university is by nature a conservative and a traditional institution. But I think the current digital revolution will make us changing. We want or we do not agree to change. It's why I think we are in a very sensitive moment for higher education and for education in general.
No, I would agree. And I think you know how important I think it is that we move forward with intentionality, that we not just let things happen to us, but that we define purpose for ourselves and for our students.
If I can add, one of a powerful book I had in my experience, and I worked with the author, the book is called Significance of Schooling in Africa by Robert Serpel, which is a friend and a scholar. I worked with Robert Serpel for many years. And what he did, indeed, he analyzed what is the significance of schooling in Zambia. And his conclusion, and I like his idea that in Zambia, schooling is extractive model. The meaning of extractive model, if you have a success in schooling, you are lost for your community of origin. And he worked in rural Zambia, and really the idea that we need to bring again in the center the significance of education and schooling, or the meaning. Why I'm here listening to a teacher? Why I'm here registered to a program? I think these questions are really central.
And so I'm so glad that you started talking about a bit about your experience working in different countries and this work in Zambia. And I'd like you to talk a bit about the context of your work in Africa. And perhaps, you know, I'm thinking as you're speaking, that one of the things we might need to take into consideration as we move forward in thinking about education is the contextualization and how we make meaning in a specific way, in a specific place, at a specific time.
Yeah, yes, indeed. The title of my last book, was published in 2025, was Rethinking Educational System in Africa toward 2030. And indeed, this book is based on many field missions I did in different countries in Africa, almost more than 12 countries this last decade. And my idea is really we need to change our understanding and the way we are thinking about educational system in Africa. And my focus in the book was to try to see what is the problem with educational system in Africa? What is the diagnostic? What we can do and what is not possible to do? And indeed, what I tried is really to have a holistic vision of educational system in Africa. So although my experience is on some African country, the proposition of the book is for the continent. And I started with a chapter, what kind of education for what kind of economic development and socioeconomic development? Because I think by all the international organization willing to fund education in Africa, to develop education in Africa, sometimes we are forgetting why we want to have more kids in school in Africa. And I tried to answer that the model of schooling is not related to the model of economic development in Africa. You know, Africa is getting with more urbanization, with more industry, but until now, until today, 75% of African population is living in rural area, working in agriculture activities. So the basic question, do the educational system are related to this reality? The answer is no. And I tried to say that we need to revise our vision of educational system to be able to contribute to the economic, socio, and cultural development of the African continent. This was the basic idea. And later in the book, I tried to say what are the priorities and what we need to fix first in Africa. And it's not about money or about funding. And I must say it's more about thinking about educational system in Africa. We need to think about educational system in Africa by Africa. You know that I'm a professor of comparative and international education. So by definition, I'm working on transfer and learning experience from other country and comparing different education system. But in the case of Africa, I must say my conviction is that we cannot improve education system in Africa if thinking about education system is not made mostly by Africa. So this is about a culture revolution. So for me, the trouble with the education system in Africa, it's not funding. It's the fact that African, because of the colonial legacy, they are not able or not willing to think independently about their educational system. So this was the second step. And later, I tried to address more technical issues like teacher training, like how to build school, how to manage school, what kind of curriculum, how to use local language, so and so on.
As you're talking, there's so many things I'm thinking about, but one is a kind of tension, really. Between and it is marked in some international organizations about understanding the fundamental purpose of education as preparing people for a world of work, and because we are thinking about the economy, but there are other purposes to education, and that's where the tension comes in. So, what do you see as a way to find the balance?
I think we forget easily that when Europe decided to make education compulsory by the second half of 19th century, most of European population worked in agriculture setting, and they did not need to be educated and to be literate. So I think you're right. We need to address the two main purposes of education. So the first one is about citizenship. I think if we want to live together in peace, to have some level of political participation, if we want to empower the majority of population, we need to make them able and competent in some competency that school can give us, reading, communicating with other, and many. So this is something important as objective of education. And the other objective is related to the job market, about social mobility. I always say that education, schooling, is an anticipation of social mobility. And this is why educational systems are not working so well in Africa and in many other parts of the world. Many youth currently, by anticipation, they know they will have no future with or without education. And this is really a big concern, because in Africa, it's also related the way that educational system in Africa are dealing with the orientation of students. Many countries let students going to secondary education and now more to higher education, while the need of the society are not with this kind of profile. And you create a lot of frustration. And it's why we need also to revise the way we are dealing with different track in educational system. And in the book, I really advance some proposition, scaring proposition, I will say. I consider that in Africa, we need, after 15 years of age, so after 9 years of basic education, we need to have three tracks. We know that by 15 years old, many African youth need to work. But we need to educate them to be a citizen. So this is one third. The second third, we need to put them in professional training. And as I said before, we need to improve the productivity of agriculture labor in Africa. And this is really a very important thing. So we need to have technician, a middle-scale technician that will be able to make a green revolution in the agriculture sector in Africa, to produce more food and to have better condition of life. And we have a last third part of youth that we can train to go to the university and to go to further education. You know, it's really very pragmatic, and all African countries will be able to fund this kind of governance of the education system. Well, I'm really aware that people will tell me, but it's better for social mobility to push the majority of African youth to higher education. It's about equality. Yes, I know, but we can also have a model that allows circulation between different tracks. So this is something really I addressed in the book. Maybe the other point that I developed in the book, that we need to go back to basics. I don't like the word basics, because sometimes it's used in education to center the educational system only on learning outcomes. But I would like to explain what I mean by the basics of education system in Africa. I think there's four pillars of what I call the basic. I think the first one, the student, the learner. And in Africa, we need to take into account that the learner, most of the time, do not speak the language of instruction. So this, without fixing these things, we cannot improve education system in Africa. So the learner. And we know that sometimes the learner is coming to school without having a breakfast or having a lunch. So we need also to address poverty. So the learner is the first pillar. The second pillar, and it may appear strange, school needs to be a good and safe space to learn. And when I visited really a lot of school in Africa, and when I'm in school most of time, it's not a good place to learn. the classroom are not well designed. Most of things that are needed are missing, like water, like toilet, like so we need really to address the question of school infrastructure. The third pillar is we are in school to learn what. So it's related to curriculum and what I called before the meaning. Most of pictures sometimes in the classroom in Africa are related to animals that are not existing in Africa. Most of the textbooks are full with picture taken from other contexts, most of the time in the global north. So I think we need to make the school curriculum related to the sociocultural context. So this is the third pillar. And the last one, and probably for me it's the most important one, is the teacher. We need to make the teacher as a professional of teaching. So it's not only a problem of education, it's a social problem, because we need to have a society respecting teacher. We need to have community trusting teacher. We need to have a moral value on teacher. And this is really a very important point. So without fixing this four pillar, we cannot improve educational system in Africa. So Karen, you observed that I did not mention international cooperation. I did not mention the government. I did not mention many things that may be considered by others as important. Why I'm not mentioning international cooperation in education in Africa? I don't know if our listener or you know that by each year, the total of aid to basic education, it's almost the price of two jumbo jets. So it's almost nothing. If you see what is put in basic education in Africa as aid or as something coming from international cooperation, it's really very low proportion. But it's a very important proportion, because international cooperation can impose their agenda because the government lack resources. So even low resources become a very important.
You know, there's so much in this story that makes you think about, well, really an enormous challenge on some levels, some basic levels, as you say. But I also see some space for what could be really amazing work, and that is linked to some terms that we have not brought into this conversation, although we have in other conversations. You know, when you're talking about the curriculum, about the text, about the images on the wall in the school, you know, to me, it's about, and something that we know to be important, and that is making the learning relevant to the experience of the children in the classroom. And children coming into a classroom where they speak a different language from the language of instruction is a really rich, sort of fertile soil for us to work on multilingual pedagogies. But, you know, again, there need to be the resources to engage with teachers in using those. But it could be a very exciting space to be in.
Exactly. I think a multicultural education, multilingual instruction may be a good possibility to make innovation in the educational system. I think the problem is that some educational systems, they are with a lot of pressure. So the choice will be, for instance, in many countries in sub-Saharan Africa, teachers have no training currently, because many governments consider that it's more important to have teachers in the classroom
than train a teacher in the classroom. So about bilingual education, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that it's easy to implement. But what I say that education without understanding, or if you are teaching in a language where students are not able to understand, you are wasting your time. So this is why, and I'm involved with some organization in Africa like the PASEC, which are trying to measure learning outcomes. And most of the time, in the beginning of primary school or at the end of primary school, learning outcomes are very weak. The only exception in sub-Saharan Africa is Burundi. Burundi have a good learning outcome level in the beginning of primary school. Why? Because they are using the national and mother tongue of learner. However, the same study shows that Burundi at the end of primary school, when they switch to French, their learning outcomes level become similar to other African countries. So we learned from this study that using mother tongue is so important for learning and for understanding again. This is really central to make better educational system.
I had the privilege of engaging in some conversations with a group of teachers in Burundi last academic year. And yes, it was a real struggle for them in lower secondary. But I also was absolutely amazed and by the commitment to think about and talk about pedagogy in a world of very few resources. There's just, you know, I want to ask one more thing before, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but there's a lot of work that you've done on intercultural learning and on global citizenship. And you mentioned citizenship in this conversation, but not global. Is that, what does that signify? A shift in focus or something else?
You know, I even edited a book on global citizenship, and I may consider myself as promoter about the idea of global citizenship education. And I think the idea of global citizenship education, to summarize, is how to live better together in our interconnected world. So, but if we want to live better together in a global world, we need to live better locally. And you know, locally, I consider that the concept of citizenship, we start by the concept of citizenship with different tradition. I think there's different way to be a citizen. But first of all, we are citizen at a local scale. So it's why in Africa, for me, what is really important is that we promote citizenship at the school level. You know, it's very practical. Think if student observe the teacher is treating him as a potential citizen, he will behave as citizen in society. So I think Africa is not disconnected from globalization, but it's a question of priority. I think now the priority in Africa is really to advance in the idea of local and national citizens. Because even in a single country in Africa, there's a lot of ethnicity, culture, people. So we need, first of all, to promote local citizenship.
later national citizenship. But of course, Africa is connected to the world. A lot of our products that we have in Switzerland and in UK came from Africa. A lot of natural resources will be coming more from Africa. So Africa is connected to the world. However, it's not connected to the world at the benefit of Africa. It's why it's important to rethink the relationship between Africa and the rest of the world.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have to stop for now, but maybe we can come back and have another conversation in the
future. With pleasure. Thank you again for your invitation. And really, I did not see that the time is running very fast. And I'm open to come again and to speak with you.
Well, that would be a real pleasure. So
thank you.
Thank you.
Please leave a comment, ask a question, and like, follow, and subscribe to hear more from BridgeEd. You can also follow The Bridge on LinkedIn, and you can find out more information on our website at thebridge.wellingtoncollege.org.uk. Until next time.